Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 58 of the Godfathers of Podcasting. You know we've been podcasting since before podcasting was even called podcasting. If you're listening to us right now on one of your favorite podcast providers, thanks for tuning in. Make sure you hit that like, subscribe. Make sure you get notified each and every week when we put out a brand new episode. You can also go to thegodfathersofpodcasting.com and check out the video version of this show so you can see Notorious TID making goofy faces and Danny O cringing throughout the entire program. Not gonna lie, it's a lot more fun than just listening. Make sure you also check out all of our merchandise on godfathersofpodcasting.com. We've got hoodies, tees, tanks, hats, everything you can imagine. All of it is fantastic quality. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. My name is Donnie Da Silva, and as we kick off Pride Month, it is my pleasure to introduce the Freddie Mercury and Boy George to my Elton John. Hold me closer, tiny dancers. Notorious TID, Chris Tidwell, and your bro, Danny O.
To your Boy George? Really?
No, I'm Elton John.
Oh, okay. So then I would have, Boy George? Yeah, I'm down with that. That dude was like a Golden Gloves boxer. Like, that dude could throw hands, right?
Between Boy George and Freddie Mercury, who had more?
But, I mean, Freddie Mercury, that's a dude with a microphone. That's Danny O for sure. So don't, Queen is, top of the charts.
But I'm saying between Boy George and Freddie Mercury, there were millions and millions of heterosexual women that were in love with them. Who do you think had a bigger following amongst that group? That's a tough call.
Freddie Mercury. That dude was like universal. You know what I mean? Like,
and he was actually married.
He just had a certain way, like an Elton John. He had a way about him where you were just drawn in as a human to him. And I mean, how could you not? God bless all of those dudes and everything that they've ever done for everybody. And happy Pride Month, Donnie. And happy Pride Month to you, Dan. This is crazy. It's you know what I mean? But here's the sad part is that a lot of celebration, we say happy Pride and it is what it is. But a lot of celebrations have been canceled again from what I hear, just like last year. And it's a shame. So hopefully we can get this stuff back going so that we can have parties. I mean, everybody deserves to party, so let's just party and have a great time. I want to get all of these festivals, all of these things back going. I want everybody to get out there and enjoy the summer before it's too late. You know, let's get the ball rolling, Canada. Let's get the ball rolling, United States. Let's get the ball rolling, world. All right, everybody, go get vaccinated and enjoy the year so far, man.
I think Dan's going to be cranky 2 years in a row without the CNE or the Caribbean Festival.
The CNE, right? But I mean, didn't they say that the Stampede is supposed to open?
I don't know. Is it?
Like
the Calgary Stampede?
Yeah.
Have you ever been?
That's what I'm hearing. The Calgary Stampede, that's there, that Alberta is going to be open. Alberta and Canada is going to be open enough so that they can have the Calgary Stampede. So, I mean, when is the Toronto CNE? The end of this summer, right?
Yeah, it usually starts around August 14th, 15th, somewhere in there, and goes till Labor Day. But they've already canceled it.
Insane. And you know what? I mean, it's not really okay. So I hate to switch gears on you though a little bit, Donnie, because this is sad. That's a shame that we can't do those things. But we're running out of time today, and I do have to bring something to light. Very, very serious. I want to switch gears very quickly because we are living in a time right now that there has been something that has come to light in the media, in the forefront, that people have been talking about for years and years and years. And I'm talking about the discovery of 215 murdered children out in British Columbia due to something that is so barbaric, so archaic, and so wrong that I have a hard time even fathoming that human beings could do this. I don't care what kind of animal you think you are serving by doing this to children and then covering it up. Has nobody thought to look in the fucking basement up to this point of this thing? And then somebody put up a map of all of these schools all over Canada. And this is just one that they found 215. This is outrageous. This is disgusting. The Canadian government needs to be put to task on this 100%. The churches that were in charge of this need to be put to task on this 100%. And this is where it gets a little silly, and I'm sorry about this, guys, but the only fucking church that hasn't apologized is the Catholic Church. And that pisses me the fuck off.
Did you see the comments when asked about this tragic situation? Did you see the response from Jagmeet Singh, the leader of the NDP party?
A lot of things
did
I
you
can
see,
let
No,
go.
I'm asking, did you see his response?
Yes. Yes.
When I saw that response, I just want to say, and not to turn this into a separate platform, when I saw that response, all I could think is that has to be the next leader of the country. It has to be. Someone asked him, can you please comment on the 250 children that were found dead? And he stood there about to cry. And it took him about, it took him about 45 seconds to a minute to compose himself. And he finally said, I'm sorry. We will get justice. You know, like he is empathetic. He is understanding and he is accountable. And that's all you can ask for from a leader.
That's all we should ask for from everybody, Donnie. Not just a fucking leader. That's what we need to ask for from everybody, all the way down to the people. When was the last time one of these schools shut down? There's still people living that have to deal with this stuff that they've been telling people for years, and it hasn't been addressed. How about the fact that, oh, I'm sorry, instead of an I'm sorry, how about, I don't know, we fix the fucking water?
Dan, you want to jump
the
in?
Stuff has gone on far too long, in my opinion. Far too long. I am glad and I'm sad at the same time. You can see the water in my eyes because I'm fucking angry at this.
Yeah.
No, but I'm glad that finally, finally, this has come to light.
Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, I've been having a hard time since the beginning of this episode to even jump in with you guys and have any fun. Because this is arguably the most disgusting and horrendous thing I've heard in Canadian history, at least in my lifetime, anything that I've heard in my lifetime about something that has taken place in Canadian history, goes without saying, I have extremely strong feelings, as I think, as you guys just mentioned, as everyone should, about any harm that's caused to any child anywhere.
Of course.
I think it also goes without saying that the indigenous of this country, and for that matter, indigenous countries throughout the world, have undoubtedly faced some of the worst atrocities imaginable. And when I heard of this news, I think I've been somewhat stoic as I am now. And I definitely feel Tid's pain, man, because as you can tell, I'm in no joking mood. I don't know how such evil could possibly exist, but we know that it does. And I can't overcome this feeling of wanting someone to pay. You and I, the three of us, have had a lot of conversations, not just on the show, off the show, about human injustice and some of the angst that I've felt and some of the Dexter-like revenge I've felt like deserves to be unleashed on certain people. And I don't even know where to throw my anger this time, because as you mentioned about Jagmeet Singh, you know, the Canadian government's responsibility to address this. I don't even know how to address it in a way that's going to make anything better. But right now I just, I feel you're painted. I just want to send truly my heartfelt support to the indigenous community of this country and worldwide. I wish I could literally do something about this. It is some of the worst news I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there's not a lot to discuss or banter about when it comes to this story, right? But one thing that we can do is we can bring awareness and we can show our empathy. And we can also remind everyone that in addition to what we said off the top, when Tid and I were
playfully going back and forth and talking about Pride Month. It's Indigenous Month, okay, here in the country of Canada.
100%.
Starting today, as of now when we're recording, June 1st, it is Indigenous Month. And, you know, it is a great opportunity to educate yourself about the struggle and the plight of that group of people and the hardships that they have undergone, not only in Canada, but throughout the world. It is absolutely shocking when you put it all into perspective. And this is
there's only one perspective, Donnie. I'm sorry. And I hate to interrupt you on this. There's only one perspective. And then I know we have to get to a guest here. Yep. And here's what it is. It doesn't matter what the perspective is. We're talking about children.
Yeah, sure.
It's children. At the end of the fucking day, it's children. And people have to pay for these crimes against children.
Yes.
Period. I'm sorry that we have to put it that way. And it's kind of a weird, it's going to be a weird segue into this kind of thing. You know what I mean? But there needs to be healing from this too. I don't know if that was a decent segue. it's tough to see all of this through the water in my eyes right now.
I hear you, dude. But everyone, but
there's a go ahead. Listen, sorry,
everyone out there appreciates the level of empathy that everyone is showing here. Like I said, it's a very difficult topic to discuss on a podcast because normally we like to bring up topics that we can have point, counterpoint, we can debate, we can throw around. There's nothing to debate here. There's nothing to discuss.
No.
It's just this situation is horrible. It's one of the most shocking and depressing and frustrating in the history of this country. That all being said, we do need to transition because we have a lot lined up for tonight's show.
So, dude, this is such a busy show, and thank you guys so much for allowing me to go off on a rant, if you will.
By all means, man.
You know, if you thank you so much. But yes, that said, oh my gosh, let's get this train back on the tracks here for a second because it is a busy week this week, Donnie. What's going on?
It is. So let's do this right now. We're going to introduce someone. We don't do segments like this very often, but we're going to do this because this person happens to be a friend of the show. And let me just say that this person happens to be a kick-ass businesswoman. She's the vice president of Mrs. Fudgemaker. She owns a skincare line. Over the last 5 years, she's been heavily involved in the cannabis industry. She's been an advocate for that industry for 30 plus years. She's also partnered recently with Danny Raposo of MasterChef Canada, who some of you may remember as the Stoner Chef. And she's here to talk to us today about Stony Cannabis, Natalie Attired, and all things cannabis related. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome a huge supporter of this program. It's Natalie Sophia. How are you?
I'm great, and thank you for having me. I'm so excited. I've been waiting so long to be on the show with you guys.
Glad to have you.
So don't mind me if I'm a bit of a spaz.
Hell no, go on.
That's awesome.
Woo, I'm freaking out.
We could use this positive energy, that's for sure.
Yeah, I heard everything that you guys said, and Chris, trust me. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah, we feel you. Believe
me. It's really unfortunate. It's not just that. There's just so many things that have come out since COVID started with the Epsteins, the Weinsteins. Now finding out that our prime minister is part of that, that the Queen and her family were part of that. And there's just way too much covering up.
Yeah.
Let's hope that crazier times don't come in front of all of this, and let's hope we can get down to some good times. Let's talk about what kinds of things are going to get people to good times, because this is why you're here, Natalie. We've already talked about the stuff in the past. Everybody knows that I have talked about you in the past on this show, and I wanted to bring you on here because I think that you have a very good brain for the product of cannabis and the virtues that it can bring in times of need and just your everyday life. But I want to start it off, because I want to ask you very quickly, what do we know? Because cannabis has always been for years and years and years, and I can see it, you know, in Dan's eyes and even Donnie's, because they're not as much, you know what I mean? What do we know now about cannabis that we didn't know 5-10 years ago that makes it more acceptable now?
Well, number one, people are starting to finally realize that cannabis has never killed anybody. Mm-hmm. You have to basically ingest or smoke the amount of your body weight within a certain amount of minutes before you can actually pass away. But the thing is that
Tid's done that.
But the thing is, everybody knows, like, you roll your joints by the fourth one, you're either taking a nap, having a shower, ordering a pizza.
Right.
Like,
hungry, happy, sleepy, just like Cat exactly. Williams said.
That's it.
Yeah. And it's really unfortunate that it took the turn that it did. And then there are people who will turn around and condemn you and call you a drug dealer. Meanwhile, right. they're sitting there with their McDonald's or bag of Doritos right. and, you know, a case of beer. Kind of mm-hmm. thing. Do you know what I mean? It's,
I do.
It is, it's got to be a balance, and people have to be more open-minded to better alternatives out there.
Natalie, one thing I've heard a lot of from people, all walks of life, is number one, as different cannabis products become legalized in different parts of Canada and the United States and around the world, the stigma is starting to fall, mm-hmm. right? The negative stigma. And I think in conjunction with that dropping of the stigma is a lot of people that have been trapped at home for the last 15, 16 months through this pandemic have turned to cannabis or CBD as a means of managing stress, managing anxiety, managing fear of the unknown, and really trying to work on their mental health. Can you speak to that at all?
No, definitely. The rise in cannabis, whether it be the flower, the concentrates, the edibles, and the oils, spiked big time. Cannabis has done really, really well since the pandemic has started. There has been an abundance of the product. Actually, there's so much of it, they're having a hard time getting rid of it. Mm-hmm. That as far as the licensed producers are concerned and the OCS and the government. There has been a huge cry, and I have noticed, especially on social platforms, where people have said that they have turned to this to cope with their anxiety, their depression, and it's better for them that they're finding, because when the pandemic first started, we drank a lot. Mm. A lot. And then, you know, then there's people that were getting sick. And I'll share a little bit of information. I was in a really toxic relationship, and he was an alcoholic. And I left him December of 2018. But September of 2020 took his life due to alcohol. And I tried very, very hard to let him see the light and what cannabis could do, and that I could actually heal his liver and things like that. Mm. But at the end of the day, anybody that's got an addiction, whether it's opiates, alcohol, whatever the case may be, you have to be the one to make the decision on, I want to be better. I want to be a better person. I want to feel better, and I want to be here.
Yeah.
If you don't have that, then there's nothing that anybody can do.
Natalie, my heart goes out to you. I'm really sorry to hear about that loss. I do want to ask you, though, for a non-smoker like me, what would you recommend in terms of, as you mentioned, on an alternative, a way to introduce cannabis into one's life for the purposes that you just mentioned, healing, and ways to introduce it to someone who, like a lot of people who still have that stigma or that aversion to it? See, I've always been pro-cannabis, but anti-smoke.
Yes.
So how would you introduce someone like me to it and sort of promote its healing factors?
Well, what I would probably do, as I always say, low and slow. You never want to go running into anything, because you never know what's going to happen, because everybody's totally different. So what I would do with you, since you don't smoke, is that I would start off with probably CBD oil and start taking a regimen of that. And now you have to remember, taking CBD is a lifestyle change. You can't just take in, oh, I'm feeling great, so I'm not going to take it anymore.
Right.
It's a lifestyle change. And then probably what I would also suggest is some low milligram edibles. Okay. Whether it be, you know, gummies or brownies, you can even actually make a can of coconut butter, and you can drizzle that on your food and do easy medicating that way without having to spend all of that money or having to intake all of that sugar and all of those calories.
Okay. Thank you.
Natalie, you are tremendous. Where can people, because we are running out of time, where can people find you, get in touch with you, have long, drawn out conversations, invite you over to their house because you're fucking awesome? Like, can people get in touch with you so they can talk to you more about Natalie Attired and everything else that you have going on?
Yeah, so for sure. So I'm on Instagram under NA Skincare, or you can find me on my personal page, which is Natalie Sophia 420. I'm also on Facebook under Natalie Sophia, but you'll also find Natalie Attired on Facebook also. If you have any questions or concerns, you can reach me through DMs on my social platforms, or you can email me at naskincare1@gmail.com.
And just to throw this out there, Natalie is working, as I mentioned in her introduction, with a company called Stony, and they will deliver all around the Toronto area, the greater Toronto area, into Hamilton, I believe, as well. Right, Natalie?
Yes, there's several locations. So I'm in a new territory, which is Kitchener-Waterloo. Mm. So there's Hamilton, London, Ottawa, Toronto, and there's a few other locations that are in the works as of right now. It just takes a little bit of time, but we are a premium delivery service. You're not going to find us like Joel hanging out on the corner with a mustard stain t-shirt and greasy track pants. So we do deliver
like
with
that guy.
Oh, well, you know, Joel is cool and everything, but his stuff looks like 1977 High Times magazine top 10.
I like that guy.
That's true. I can attest to it. I can attest to it, and everybody knows that I am a bit of a connoisseur of it.
Yes, definitely.
Natalie, our featured guest is waiting in the backstage area, and we do want to get to him. I want to say this very quickly. Late last year, my co-host and my brother from another mother, Notorious TID, Chris Tidwell.
Hello.
He was very public on this show talking about how his wife was going through a very difficult time, going through cancer treatment. And I can tell you how on a regular basis, Tid talked about how you and your products helped Kelly so much during that time. So I know he has thanked you profusely over the last, you know, 8, 9, 10 months. I want to say myself and on behalf of Dan and all of our listeners, thank you so much for everything you did for Kelly Tidwell and for my brother Chris and for everyone out there that you continue to help with your amazing products. Thank you. Everyone out there, make sure you get in touch with Natalie and she'll answer all your questions.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Thank you so much, guys. It was such an honor. It was fun. Thank you.
Thank you, Natalie.
Thanks, Natalie.
Bye.
There she goes, everybody. Check her out. She gave out her socials, and we'll have all her information available up on the Godfathers of Podcasting.
Thank you again, guys. Wow, this has been a bit of a weird thing. Holy crap. Holy Jesus, Mother of Murphy.
Look who it is.
It's time for the big hello, because this week's guest is a screenwriter, producer, director, author, and he's an actor with several hundred acting credits to his name. You've seen him in tons of movies like Home Alone, Billy Madison, El Camino, Annie, and many more. You've also seen him in some of the most iconic television shows of all time, like Seinfeld, Breaking Bad, Malcolm in the Middle, Party of Five, Home Improvement, Married with Children, Lois and Clark, Star Trek, WKRP, Vernon Shirley, Family Ties, Eight is Enough, Alf, Newhart, and on and on and on. Just this past week, his character, Mr. Heckles, showed up on the highly anticipated reunion of Friends, the one where they get back together. He currently has about 6 projects that are currently filming, in post-production, or have just been announced. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show for his second appearance, the guy who stole the raisins. It's Larry Hankin.
Yes, sir.
Thank you and good afternoon. Goodbye.
You said it all already.
Get out while the going's good.
Tremendous.
Okay, I can't follow that.
You're known for doing your cameos, I guess. So
yeah, you made a cameo on the show and left. We'll try to keep it down, Mr. Hankin.
Luckily, I don't follow me, so it's cool. Thank you. How you doing, guys?
We're doing well. Now that you're with us, man.
Absolutely. Listen.
Thank you for having me back. I just caught the tail end of that last thing. That was pretty cool. So
very cool.
Yeah.
Natalie's a great human being, and she's got a great line of cannabis and CBD products. And we wanted to give her a little bit of airtime to talk about it. And she did so much for Chris's wife as she went through.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Cancer treatment. Yeah. Cool. So, Larry, how much correspondence and fan service have you been getting over the last week since the Friends reunion episode?
More than I've gotten before last year. Wow. Sure. You guys know this, and I know this, and maybe everybody else out there know this, but I was following my fans, but just for, basically for Mr. Heckles, because that's the most, has the most fans for me.
Right.
So I was following him, and I was getting really impressed with the amount of fans I have. Mr. Heckles is really big in India, for what it's worth.
Wow.
But the point of me saying that is that it's all a chimera. It's all in one's head. Fans have nothing to do with fandom. That's what I'm talking. Not about me or you guys, but fandom. In other words, it's not accurate at all. At all. It's, you know, if you have 4 million fans, that's not true. I don't care. I don't care if you're a big, I don't care if you're Clint Eastwood. You know, Clint Eastwood is either more famous than what he thinks he is, or he's less famous than he thinks he is. But none of that stuff is accurate. That's all I'm saying. So to speak to Mr. Heckles and, you know, how many more did I get before the 27th and after? I got a lot more, but it didn't matter because I don't believe any of the figures. I mean, they were the real people. It's not like somebody scamming me. You know, like 140 or 300 and whatever. But that's not. That's either part of it or all of it. You know, you can't tell, man. Speaking of ones who didn't write in, didn't show up. So I only have those. So is that all the fans I have or only a tenth or millionth, you know?
Right. You know, speaking of what's real, I want to check in with Mr. Heckles for a second, if I can. Is there anything that he said to the friends that he had that he actually had? I know he could have them. But is there anything
Ask that again.
Well, you know, Mr. Heckles,
you could play the oboe.
Yeah, you could play the oboe. You could have cats. Mr. Heckles always could have something. Is there anything that he actually had that he, when he complained to the friends, that he really had?
He has birds and cats. One of the birds happens to be an ostrich.
Okay.
In a New York City apartment.
And two of the other birds happen to be a parakeet and a pelican, and that's it.
That's it.
And the pelican always wins.
So for the record, pelican, ostrich, and parakeet are Mr. Heckles' apartment.
A pelican, a parakeet, and an ostrich.
Gotcha. He doesn't have that. I've always wanted to know.
No question in my mind.
I know, Larry, some people will be very, very interested in knowing that.
I know that there are tons and tons of fanatics of that show that you made a guest appearance on for that reunion that a lot of people thought would never happen. Mm-hmm. And then it happened. Do you have any stories from being on set when that was filmed? When was it filmed? Did you interact with anyone?
It was 30 years ago or 20 years ago. I don't even look like Mr. Heckles, and I was on that show on May 27th. It's just crazy. I did it totally for the money. That's all I did it for.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I got a lot of money to do 2 seconds worth of bullshit.
Yeah. Well, speaking of which, the last time you were on our show, if I remember correctly, you were talking about how Mr. Heckles was a recurring character up until a certain point, and then they stopped you at that point, so you didn't get the recurring character.
Did you get what you deserve?
Did you get the money that you were supposed to have gotten?
I checked, man. I didn't trust those people at all.
Yeah, because I mean, you did the episode,
did the show. I mean, I signed the contract and everything. I mean, you know, it's a real show.
Yeah,
but there's so much hoopla and bullshit about, you know, the limo is going to pick you up and it's going to take you there. And it is all this hype that is so hollow, man. And it just gets worse as you get paid more and more money. The hollowness is just the echo of bullshit. It's amazing. You can't believe it. So after a while, I just numb out or whatever. And I just don't pay any attention to it. And finally, I got a call from somebody because it adds up. It leaks over to other projects, which have nothing to do with the hype of this one, because these people are sincere and these aren't. And I just take the anger and I go, you know, so I have to be very, very careful of what I say about one show to another. I mean, there's very few. Most of the time it's great. And I'm writing a book about it, about my dyslexia in show business. I think maybe that's the title, but
interesting.
I have dyslexia. And so I mistake a lot of instructions. And sometimes it pays off because yep. I make a right decision, but I always have a 50-50 chance of getting it right. Yeah. That's always a possibility.
Yeah.
So sometimes when I get it right, this dyslexia takes me way off into, holy shit, what if that's capturing lightning in a bottle? And I go, you know, what did I do? And they go, oh, that was amazing. I'll give you an example. Barry, which I love. I mean, I love Bill Hader. I just revere the guy. And he's so talented, and he's right on, and he just gets me every time. Even when he's bad, he's good. I did the show, and I got the sides. And it was the only show. I took it so seriously. The fact that I felt honored to be asked to audition. I mean, you know. So I don't even think they asked me to audition. They think, would you just do it? And I said, yes. And I never do that. But for him, sure. He's not going to stab me in the back. And he didn't. But here's why I'm telling you this. I got the sides. So I said, yes, I'll do it. And he said, okay, send me the sides. And so they sent me this. And I really liked the character. It was Stofka. It was a hitman. And they said, you know, it's like in acting, you know, can you ride a horse? Oh, yeah, sure. You know.
Right.
Can you do a split level and a tumble off a three-story building? Yeah, sure.
Can you cry in that movie that you had?
Exactly. Can you cry? Oh, yeah. But when it comes time to. Okay. Yeah. So can you do a Russian accent? And I said, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I can't do it. But I said yes. And I was stuck now with being stuck with my yes. I had to deliver.
Sure.
Now, the only I try to. I'm not one for research or, you know, calling people or, you know, I'm not getting
professional. You're the anti-actor.
I'm the anti-actor. I'm not going to be an actor, and I don't believe I really am. I'm a stand-up comedian.
Okay.
So a stand-up social anthropologist. I know. Okay. So I studied the part, and the only connection to a Russian accent is in the committee. I've been in Second City. I've been in the committee. So in improv, you got to, you know, snap to it. You know, do a Russian hitman, and you got to snap into it. It's okay. You don't do any research. You just do it. And what is so I thought, okay, my backup is I'll just do my improv Russian, which is yada yada. You know, it's. Okay, so I go in and I figure, well, by the time I had like 2 weeks or something before, by that time, something will come up. I'll run across somebody. I asked a couple of people. They didn't know. Nobody cared, by the way. Nobody cared. Right. So I get there. Now I'm looking because they said, here's my backup was, they said, well, would you mind? This is the one phone call, you know, will you do it? And then and I said, yes. And then they said, can you speak Russian? Can you do a Russian accent? And I said, yes. And then they said, would you mind if we had a Russian language person there in case, you know, it's needed? So I said, fine. So I didn't have to worry, you know, if I couldn't do my, if they wouldn't accept my improv Russian, I had an expert there. And so that was a cushion. It was really cool. So I show up, I didn't do any research at all. And the first thing I look at once I get in my costume is, where's the Russian dialectician? And nobody knows where she is. I didn't even know it was a she. It turned up to be a she. But nobody knew where that person was. And I asked around, and I was starting to get worried because I had only like a half hour before I was going to go on camera. So I had to find her really fast. And then finally.
Learn Russian.
So finally, I get the AD says, you're up, man. And he goes, yeah, but I haven't found the up. So I said, okay, you know, Second City improv Russian. So I start doing the part. you know, I'm setting it up and I'm rehearsing and I'm doing my improv Russian. Nobody's saying anything. Bill Hader's not saying anything. Now, I watched him direct another scene and he's like a perfectionist. He's really cool. He's not saying anything. All right, I just keep going with my Russian improv thing. And I noticed that now he's not talking to me at all. if I have an imagination or I'm assuming too much, I think he's avoiding me. Mm-hmm. And but I, you know, but I, there's no time to ask anybody why is this happening, or they get, you know, now go over there and we'll break it down. We're going over here. It's your turn. When they're just shooting and they're on a schedule, and so I just keep going. And finally, all right, I'm dismissed. And all the time, the whole day that we shot, he never spoke to me one word from the time I rehearsed the first time to when he said, okay, Larry's dismissed. Okay. So I went up to him and I said to Bill, and I go, hey, can I ask you a question? He goes, yeah, man, what? You know, and he didn't seem angry or anything. I said, yeah, what? I said, you know, you didn't talk to me the whole time I was shooting. I mean, all day, man. I mean, he didn't give me any directions at all. It's something, right. I guess I was doing something right, but I mean, was there a reason why you wouldn't talk to me? And he said, oh yeah, you know, me and my partner and his writing partner, he also writes it and directs it and he's in it. My writing partner's here all the time. He said, me and my writing partner didn't write Stovka the way you were doing it. We wrote it kind of funny, kind of. So when you showed up and you were doing it, you know, really serious, we were talking about it. We didn't know what the hell you were doing or where you were coming from, but it was working. And oh, wow. We thought it was better than what we wrote. So we were staying away from you. And I didn't want to give you any direction because I thought I didn't know what to tell you. And I didn't know where you were coming from. So I just avoided you. So I thought that was really cool. But that's the dyslexic thing about, you know, one part I'm doing it and I don't know what I'm doing. In another part, I think I'm doing it great and I'm not really doing it. And it's Mr. You know, it's just a crapshoot every time I show
it. It's also a little bit of actor paranoia.
Have a title for your book, man. Yeah. Fake it till you make it, then fake it some more. Because it seems to be working okay, for you, man.
Well, here's the thing. It's like when they ask you the question, can you do this? The appropriate answer is always yes, because it's not up to you to decide whether you're doing it well enough for what they need. Yeah, that's up to them. So absolutely, you're like, yep, pay me. Yep, uh-huh, I can do that, pay me.
You're right on, man. I don't know where you've been all my life.
Wait, working, man, but outside your window.
Jiving, and I had the rule.
Now, Larry, I need to rewind a second because I feel like we railroaded off of my attempt at a TMZ style answer. Did you get any real interaction with cast or crew at the Friends reunion? I'm still dying to know.
No, not what? Not a single interaction at all.
Did you get a stone?
No spinoff.
Told to stay there. And one time I came down and they go, where's your mask? Get back in your dressing room. Get back in your dressing room.
Wow.
Run back upstairs. No. And then they told me, okay, it's your turn. And they brought me downstairs and then they put me behind the door.
Yeah.
So I couldn't even see. I had one rehearsal when they weren't there. Nobody was there, just me rehearsing through the door. Then they came through. I read my question. I told the audience to shut up, you know, with like this. I was like, shut the fuck up. Let me do my thing and get out of here. So if you saw my hand go like this, that's what I was doing. I
was, it's smart.
And I said my line, and then they, you know, somebody remembered my name or called it out, you know.
Kudrow.
Mr. Hooples, Mr. Heekles, Mr. Hinkles. And then I left, and then they shoved me in a car, and I went, and then drove me home. That was it. Two seconds.
Did you break it? Did you break it down? Did you break down the pay, like by minute, so you knew, like, okay, I'm gonna get out there. I'm gonna say my shit. I'm gonna bounce because they're not giving me the respect.
Well,
you know what I mean. So like, why the fuck bother? Right?
Well, I've done that for many parts, so I didn't do it for that. But I have done the math of they're paying me $5,000 to do this kind of part, like in a sitcom. you know, maybe you get $5,000 a week if you're just a, you know, an extra, so yeah, whatever. Mm-hmm. So they give me $5,000. Okay, so I get the $5,000. Now I watch the show, and then I have a stopwatch, and I stopwatch how long I'm on screen.
Right.
Okay. And I was getting for paying, getting $5,000. I figured out I was getting like $100,000 a minute or something like that for, you know, like 10 seconds on screen or 1 minute. You see how the logic goes.
Sure. Yeah. But that's your base now. That becomes your base. That's what you have to ask for.
No, so I figured out this is the mathematics I use. Now, here's the mathematics. First of all, whatever you tell me, whatever you are going to say, all right, you're going to get, say, $10,000 for this.
Yeah.
Done, and we sign the contract. Okay. After taxes and all that kind of, you know, I will get half of what you said. So that's my take home is $5,000.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
And then, what was your exact question? Because that's how the, right. This and the mathematics. So that's my base. So that's my baseline, not 10,000. My baseline is half of what you tell me. Okay. Right. From there, I then say the $5,000, I act for free. So I'm doing your job for free. And the $5,000 that I take home is the money I get paid until my next gig.
Okay.
That's how I work it out.
It's an interesting way to do
That's fair. That's fair. It keeps you honest. Keeps you honest and lets you know you've got this much. You've got this much. Yeah, you've got this much, and then I need to have this much. It's not that you're not a greedy prick like a lot of the people down there. You
know I gotta work it out. I gotta work it out financially. So I mean, in other words, if I the same thing, you know, you pay me $10,000, my base is five, but if I don't get another job for 3 months.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Then that base goes down.
Take me through.
Stretch.
Yeah. Or if I get a job tomorrow, hey, man, I can put it in the bank. Or I can make a movie, which is generally what I do.
All right. You know. So what's tomorrow's job, Larry?
Right.
Tomorrow's job is my own. I don't.
Okay.
I stopped working for you, Chris.
Well, I have a question about the jobs, do you? Because I'm fascinated by some of these stories of you as an actor on set. Like, I'm actually wearing a Breaking Bad t-shirt in tribute to the fascinating story you told last time on the show. I didn't recognize it.
That's not
the Heisenberg.
I know. Oh, there he is.
There
right.
You go.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So when I heard that, Joe, you practically, you know, improvised your way through that scene.
Oh, right. I improvised.
It blew me away. And then the story that you just told is another version of you winging this Russian accent, doing something that was so fantastic, the director loved it. Do you have a story where you winged it, flubbed it, and it didn't pan out? Because I know that Larry Hankin's been masterful in the stories that he's told so far, but do you have the horrible situation? Has that happened to you?
No, I've had horror stories, but nothing like that. I mean,
like Larry, we can't use that thing.
You know, I hate to say it because
you're that good.
Expected it, but no. I mean, when push came to shove, my luck has always fallen on the side of.
Nice.
I just saved it by the skin of my teeth.
Right.
I just did something like that the other day, where I realized, oh my God, I was winging it, and luck just happened to things fell into place, and I escaped being hurt.
Yeah, you got to be good to be lucky, though.
Physically, but I mean,
yeah.
Do you think that it had, like, you come from the world of improv as opposed to, like, you know what I mean?
That's why
a serious trained actor. Like, improv seems to work so much better, right? Because you have the ability to work on the fly, right?
Yeah, but I was really good. I was really good at improv.
And
I
modest.
Liked to be, and I would have liked to have been an improv guy for the rest of my life. And that's the only reason I can brag about it is that's my best shot. Yeah. I left that, but I never could fail. And here's why. Dyslexia has always been not my friend through my entire life. See, that I would always get caught, you know, doing the wrong thing, not in show business, just in my life.
Right.
with girlfriends and with, you know, car payments. But because I forget, it's a dyslexia and unable to read. That's what it means. Right.
Huh. Yes.
But in show business, the dyslexia basically taps into my subconscious, not my conscious. That's why I screw up. But when I'm forced through trauma or adrenaline to live by my wits, my subconscious, my fast thinker, the thing that makes your eyes blink without you knowing it, they just blinked. Uh-huh. That. The dyslexia taps into that when the adrenaline goes. So generally, the dyslexia and my adrenaline makes me make the correct choice. If there is a correct choice to be made.
Right.
Sometimes I have.
Or at least a choice that works.
Or a choice that works. So I thank my dyslexia for some things that go right. But also I know that I can't rely on it totally because it always gives me two choices because I don't know what I just read totally. Mm-hmm. In other words, and if you, the thing where you said I improvised an entire scene.
Yeah.
Well, how it went was I had my part memorized, but what they did was they gave me a monologue when I showed up for the shoot. Right.
Yeah.
The dyslexia will not allow me to memorize that fast.
Right.
So it just looks like a bunch of letters on a page. It doesn't even take cognizance of the space between words. It's just all letters, too much. But if I break it down into little paragraphs, then I can understand it. But there was no time.
Right.
I had 2 hours and I tried. So I had to improvise. I mean, there was no question. What I didn't have to do was I didn't have to not cop to not being able to memorize it.
Right.
I wouldn't cop to it. I wouldn't tell anybody.
And that's the fascinating part, man. And that scene is so pinnacle. I'll always, you know, it's one of my favorites, man. It was so high tension, a big, big part of that show.
Somebody else said, well, it worked because there was such tension anyway.
For sure. For sure.
But you know, the director just said, hey, you know, let's do it once more. I only did it twice. And he said, hey, goodbye. Great. Thank you.
Amazing.
Because he knew and I didn't. He knew from the second line I said that this guy doesn't have the, it's not memorized. He's winging it.
Right.
So he already was going ahead into the editing room and he was editing what I was saying. Mm-hmm. Does it fit what I need? And the second time he walked next to me. Now I didn't like it. I got insulted because I was like kindergarten, but he said, the cinematographer said, aren't you going to stand next to the camera, to the director? And he said, cause I was walking towards the camera. So it was just a long walk and talk. So he said, no, where am I out of the frame right here? He said, I'm going to walk with my actor. And I thought he was going to feed me lines because I'd forgotten something. He never said anything. When I improvised it at the end, he said that, great, let's do it again. So immediately, he didn't say anything to me. He didn't want to screw me up or frighten me. He just knew I'm improvising. It's kind of online with what I need. Let's do it once more and see if I can fill in the holes. I'm going to walk next to him. I didn't know why, but I finally figured it out. What he was doing, because his head was buried in the book the entire time. He didn't look at me at all. He was listening to my words and seeing if I said what he needed to fill in the first time.
Right.
And when I got to the end, I thought he was going to say, well, you're fired. And he said, that was dismissed. Everybody got to go, you know. Okay, thank you, Larry. That was great. And I didn't learn about it until I watched it on TV and I saw what he did. And I thought, he knew from the second line I said that this is what he was going to do. So he didn't cop to it at all either. Actually, he didn't worry. He didn't say nothing.
But it's so great. The scene's so great.
The beauty sometimes is being able to take what you know, still get what you need out of your actor. right? Well, that's the improv. Everybody's happy. Everybody gets what they need, and there's no drama because as soon as there's drama,
same thing. Bill Hader, that's what he did. He didn't say anything. Yeah, don't fuck him up. Leave him alone.
Nope.
We're cool. If I was not cool, he'd stop me right away.
Yeah. You're a fucking magician. You're a fucking magician, really, Larry. And you don't interfere. You don't interfere with a magician when he's doing his fucking magic.
Right. Yeah, I don't.
That's what I'm saying.
But I'm evil.
Take the compliment, Larry. Yeah, man. Take the fucking compliment.
Let me jump in, Larry. Switching gears a little bit. At the beginning, you were talking about all the bullshit in Hollywood, which I think is kind of interesting when you talk, when we're talking to someone who's been in Hollywood, who's been a professional actor for like what, 5 decades, right? Or more. And it's really astounding when we look at the body of your, of your work, when we look at your resume and you're like, it's all bullshit. It's all this, it's all that. It reminds me a lot. And it's timely that we're talking about this. And maybe I'm thinking about it because this gentleman just passed in the last few days. Paul Soles was a voice actor based out of Toronto. Most people remember he was the voice of Hermie the Elf in the Rankin-Bass Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. He was also Spider-Man in the 1960s Spider-Man cartoon that ran for a few years and was really popular. He was based out of here in Toronto. A few years ago at a comic convention, I met him and I said, listen, as a guy who always wanted to do voice work, you were one of the guys I looked up to. And he sat there with me and we chatted and he said, you know what? Fame, celebrity, it's all bullshit. It's all transient bullshit. He's like, if you talk to a 15-year-old today and tell them that I worked with Bob Hope, they go, who the fuck is Bob Hope? Right? If like, it's so hard to like the biggest stars in the world 20, 30 years from now are a distant memory. Do you know what I mean? And like, it makes it feel like all of this fame and celebrity is so transient, but we put so much stock and emphasis into it.
Yeah. I don't understand Homo sapiens really.
Yeah. I feel that way a lot.
It's a great response.
Yeah.
He made
another good book title, actually.
Too. I do find I say it often. I'm like just constantly shake my head like I have Tourette's, and I'm like, fucking people.
Yeah.
Come on, man. I mean, I don't get like how, you know, there's fans, and you know, right to what Donnie was talking about, and then there's like Trump and politics.
Right.
I don't understand Homo sapiens. I mean, we're not going to survive. You can't think like that. You know, it doesn't. I mean, it works now for a couple of minutes or a couple of years, but species is doomed, man.
it's reactionary. It's reactionary. It's a reactionary view to the time, not having any kind of forward thinking and being able to have any kind of preservation for the future. Plain and simple, in my opinion, right?
Yeah. No. Exactly. Here's the way I explain it, but it's what you're talking about. It's okay. 10,000, 15,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, if I pointed, where's the camera? Okay. So if I pointed that way and I said to you, walk that way forever, if you could, walk that way straight forever, where would you end up? And you'd probably say, well, in infinity. Okay. All right. That's a good answer. Okay. But today, if I pointed that way and said, walk that way if you could forever, you know, where would you end up? And where you would end up is coming from that way.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, in other words, this brain of ours has been around for minimum. This brain of mine has been around for 250,000 years. And what it got acclimated to, you know, adapt or die, is the world, the earth where we are, is forever, infinite, and all the water and food is infinite, and everything is infinite. It's all infinite. It goes on.
I'm glad you didn't say flat. Jesus fucking Christ.
Well, you know, if you go there, you may fall off the edge, but you still keep going that way. Okay, but
if you go that way in the world's flat, you ain't coming back.
Well, yeah, but now in the last, we've only known the world, even assumed that the world might be round for 1800 years.
Right.
Most 1800 years. So our brain has been adapting for 250,000 years to infinity, and only 1200 to 1800 years been adapting to know finite. We can only go that far, and then we come back. We can use up all the water. We can poison the air. We can put mercury in the water. We can use up all the land. We can poison the air. But we've only been thinking for 1,800 years. Our brains aren't fast enough. So we are like apes trying to figure out what a cube is. I mean, it's just we can't – we're not keeping up with what we're doing.
It's not – It's not unlike the fact that in the 1790s, vaccines were invented, and there's still people going that this shit is all experimental, and you're just putting dead babies in your veins.
We don't really know how to deal with reality, You know, cats do, alley cats do, cockroaches do, even elephants do.
They're a higher life form.
Yeah, they are. I really believe, because they know everything is finite. You know, you got to fight for the edge of your territory. Not that you should fight for the edge. There's other ways of doing it. We just haven't. That's why I said about the apes and trying to figure out a cube. We don't know the better way. We only know it works this way. If I punch you, you'll get out of my way. That works. It does. But we don't think there are other better ways to maybe get around you.
Right.
We just know punching you works.
Right.
Yeah, but animals know. Yeah, but you know they just make themselves bigger because they don't want to get injured and starve to death because they can't hunt anymore. I mean, they know. They just know, and we don't. I'm sorry to get into this stuff.
No, it's cool.
No, this is fascinating.
It's fascinating, man.
Yeah.
I wanted to rewind to that conversation I referenced with voice actor Paul Soles, who passed away this past week at the age of 90, when he said to me, celebrity, fame, Hollywood, it's all bullshit. He said, the only thing that's truly timeless is music. And he said, for that reason, I wish I had been a rock star. So as I think through this,
isn't music weird, man? See, that's miracle. Weird. That's magic, man.
It is magic because if you think about it, movies and television shows should have that same timeless quality, but they don't because we look at the visuals and we see things and we go, oh, that's really dated just by the look, but the sound.
The sound has no there. It goes in here, so you don't even see it. You can't feel it. So it's more magic than visual, which, I can touch this.
Right. Sure.
Oh, that hurts.
Right. So when Larry Hankin is listening to music, what are you listening to, Larry?
You know, I'm trying to look for new. I tell you, I'm trying to learn music. So that's why I knocked my head about how magic it is. But Bob Dylan, country, I'm getting into country Western music, the real stuff, Merle Haggard.
Larry Hankin sounds like a country singer's name, come to think of it.
Yeah.
I
know that really famous big time comedy people have double syllables, Charlie Chaplin.
Right.
Woody Allen. Yes. Larry Hankin.
It works.
I just can go on. There's millions of them like that. Da-da-da-da.
I'm just saying it. Maybe I see spanking Larry Hankin as a guy in a cowboy hat and a guitar.
What?
I don't know.
Hold on. This begs the question. Why are you seeing that? Why are you seeing that, Dan?
I'm visualizing the album cover. I don't know.
Dan wants to produce it.
No, visualizing an album cover of Spank and Larry Hankin.
The country singer. I'm just saying.
No, Lance Hunt was my famous movie. That was the guy. Well, I was going to call myself
Lance. There Hunk.
Spank and Hank. Lance Hunk.
That sounds more like a wrestler. That's your wrestling. Right.
Sounds like a porn star.
That's
I didn't know that then. I have a genius for porn star names. Is that that's
all right?
I can name porn stars. No, that's the only one I came up with.
If we go back to your homeless days when you were struggling, did you do a few films with Ron Jeremy? Were you working in the adult entertainment industry?
I did two pornos, maybe three. No, but I was the comic relief in the
You were the husband. You were the husband that left to go to work.
Right.
Right.
Let me tell you, being the comic relief in a porno movie doesn't work.
It's a tough gig.
Nobody's paying any attention to what you're doing or saying.
That's pure fast forward material.
Oh my
God. That has got to be the most intense crowd work ever. If you're standing there.
Here's the roles I've done in my life. I'll give you just one in the porno movie. I've done three.
I thought you were kidding.
We said,
hey, we got a porno movie because I worked in the committee in San Francisco. And back in the 60s, San Francisco was the porny home for the United States. It's moved down to the valley here now.
Yes,
but,
right.
So they would all come to the show. So they knew us, you know, I mean, just for being in the audience. So they called me once and said, hey, would you be in it? And I thought that would be really cool because I'd never done a porno movie, you know. Knew a lot of them. But I said, hey, cool. So they said, nah, but you don't have to take off your clothes. It's just you're going to what we need is a straight person to interview pornography people. I said, oh, well, that's cool. You know, be an interviewer for a newspaper, a fake newspaper. So I said, okay, I'll do it. And they just told me show up at this time, you know, and dress like a reporter, you know, like a cub reporter. This is in my 20s, I guess, late 20s. Wow. So I did. I showed up. It was out in Sausalito somewhere, private home. And I go in, and they give me a pad and a pencil, you know, and I see they're setting up. And I said, okay, so where do I interview these people? Where will they be sitting? Where will I be sitting? And they said, no, no, it's going to be a group fuck, and you're going to go from couple to couple just interviewing them as they're fucking.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Wow. Was the director Lloyd Kaufman?
Are you looking this up, Ted?
Well, anyway, I did it. And it's strangest.
If I can find this, I'm gonna watch it.
Where's the name of this project?
Yeah, is it on your IMDb?
Where's the name of this porno?
This was a very, very, very low budget porno. So all the people weren't beautiful, abbed people and muscular and tan.
Oh, right.
They were just
Beyonce
white switching couples. Oh my God. You know, fat, skinny, tall, you know, whatever. They just weren't what I was thinking.
They call that gonzo porn.
Gonzo porn. Okay. I've never gonzo seen it. Porn. No, yeah. I didn't, you know, but I've always wondered. I would love to get a clip of that and play that on my head.
Dude.
Here's the thing, listeners. The hunt is on.
The call is out, man. All our listeners and viewers out there, if you find
hunt
a clip
down.
Of a porno from
every
about
once in a while,
years ago,
every once in a while, I did another one because of the proximity, and they were the audience, so they would come up to me, and none was as weird as that. Then I did like ordinary ones where I was the comic relief and stayed dressed, but it was always, you know, when I would go watch the, you know, the crew film, you know, the finished film for the crew, just to see what it was.
Is craft services different on a porno?
Lots of whipped cream. And
is craft services different, or do they have catering?
Coffee and a condom, I think, is
right.
I just had the best idea. One of the most popular genres for porn are parodies, right? So someone has to produce a Friends parody porn, and Mr. Heckles makes a cameo, knocks on the door and says, "You're doing it again."
Yeah.
Okay.
That needs to happen.
What you've done is put the word out, and now
you're gonna get calls, Larry.
Yeah. I'm gonna get calls.
I want a sequel.
Who plays me and just kind of get the gist, you know, idea of how what it would have been like.
No, you play you.
Yeah. You play that's, you. Hey, I want 10% on that cut.
Well, now, what kind of price are we talking, gentlemen?
Hey.
Oh, fuck. Never ever go away, Larry.
Everybody's got a price.
Never ever go away.
Oh, man.
You are the best human being in the world.
You're no a treasure, doubt. Larry Hankin.
Yes, sir.
Listen, tell everyone out there, because we're running late on time and we don't want to keep you all night, but tell everyone out there, how can they get in touch with you? How can they find you online?
Stop.
TheRealLarryHankin.com is my website. So, then there's starting May 27th, it just started, a Patreon website, which has all my fish shorts and my two paintings, well, my 40 paintings. I have 40 paintings, my T-shirts. Wow. All my paintings are on T-shirts. All my film shorts are on Patreon. What else? Oh, and my art T-shirts and film shorts are on TheRealLarryHankin.com and Patreon.
And you're on Cameo, right?
Selected a better selection of stuff on Patreon.
And you're also on Cameo.
And Facebook. You know, you can always say hi on my Facebook and say you watch it on your show.
Right.
Yeah, that's just Facebook. Larry Hankin, Facebook.
Okay. If people want a happy birthday wish from Mr. Heckles, they can go to Cameo.
Cameo.
Right.
Larry Hankin will wish you a happy birthday. Well, Mr. Heckles will.
Nice.
Who else? Mr. Heckles and
Old Joe. Can I get a birthday wish from Old Joe?
Oh, Old Joe is giving somebody a birthday party. Not a birthday party, a birthday greeting.
Nice.
Old Joe. There's one other. I can't remember. Friends, Mr. Heckles.
What about Fake Kramer?
Kramer. Pepper. Tom Pepper. Yeah. Mr. Kramer.
Nothing from Charlie Butts. Can't get a cameo from Charlie.
No, and frankly, that I believe personally that that's my best work ever, and that was my first big tentpole movie. I was lost there, but the character was lost in prison. Yeah. Charlie Butts. So it just fit perfectly. What the fuck I was doing, man.
Neither do we. We still don't, Larry.
Yeah.
We don't know what the fuck we're doing.
Yeah, but when I auditioned for that. That part, I didn't know what I was doing. I hadn't, done enough auditions. And the director knew that because he started putting me on, Don Siegel, who's a great man, is such a great man. But he pinned me that this kid is lost. I want him in the movie. And nobody else did. And he insisted. He said, no, this guy is Charlie Butts, and you put him in. And he protected me the whole way, and he just fed me all the time. Don't worry, Larry. You're doing great. You're doing great, man.
And directors fucking know you, Larry. Good directors know you and what to expect.
And your I just love my whole thing. And I just hung around with Clint Eastwood because, I was mutt to his Jeff. Again, I was in a subservient position, which was what Charlie Buck was all about. So, it just worked out fine. Again, luck.
Again,
I just like that Larry Hankin's talking about his tentpole movie when we already learned that the tentpole came in that porno he did about 60 years ago. That was the tentpole.
I tell you, I didn't get a rise at all in any of the three.
Come on.
I know, because it was that weird, man.
Right.
It was that strange. I mean, because I wasn't expecting... The reality. I just wasn't expecting. It just. It wasn't. But
I wasn't feel like. I feel like strange.
The lights and
too many balls.
and
just like testicles everywhere.
I don't know. I feel like strange is your milieu. I feel like that's your wheelhouse. You're comfortable in strange.
He's here with us,
right?
So I feel relaxed.
you bring us the most fun we could have on this show.
Amazing.
Man. I feel Thank honored you. You did this twice. I can't Thank wait for the next one, man.
Let's see if I can do it a third time.
I would love that.
That's Larry Hankin, everybody. Everyone's favorite king of the cameos, king of the day jobs.
Yes,
thank you so much, sir. We'll talk again soon.
Okay. Thank you, guys. I really had a good time. Thank you, man.
It was
Larry
so
Hank
fun.
And everybody. Again, if you didn't already see it, the Friends reunion special, the one where they get back together, is on now. And you can see Larry's, as he said, 5-second cameo where they paid him hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Unbelievable.
It's amazing. I don't know how this happened, but if I remember correctly, Larry Hankin has been a guest on our show. And both times something incredibly tragic happened right before his appearance on our show. And trust him to help change the vibe
completely.
And what a gem of a person, a gem of an actor, and a gem of a guest. And yeah, thank you, Larry.
He's an international treasure that must be protected at all costs.
Absolutely.
They say that you're only alive as long as somebody remembers and speaks your name. And I hope that everybody remembers to speak his name long, long, long time.
Well said, Tid.
No doubt.
Gentlemen, final thoughts before we sign off?
Please.
Well, that was my final thought, to be honest with you, man. I'm appreciative of Larry certainly doing this show. And as always, of you guys for being able to be this continuous trinity of strength amongst the three of us. Quite obviously, this was one of those difficult ones. Certainly was for me. Obviously was for you guys too. Tid, like I said, I could feel you, brother. And like I said, my heart continues to break at the world's continuous tragedies. But I'm thankful for the opportunities like this where it can be restored in some fashion.
I will always say that, you know, everybody has things that cut them deeply. And everybody knows that I am not a person that usually cracks at any given time. Something like this will make me crack every single time. This one cut me deeply. Thank you, guys. And thank you, everybody who's listening. And please, let's not stop it at the end of this show. I am dead serious. People need to be held accountable
for
these children the atrocities that are happening, and because there are going to be more found. Expect that. Yeah. In the meantime, everybody, if you have children, hug them, cherish them, love them, protect them at all cost.
My last comment, since both of you gentlemen spoke so eloquently on that topic, on a completely unrelated note, I just want to throw this out there. John Davis, Grammy Award winner, passed away this week. And in case you don't know, who's John Davis? He had 3 number one hits as the man who controlled the puppets known as Milli Vanilli.
Yeah.
John Davis with Blame It on the Rain, Girl You Know It's True, and Girl I'm Gonna Miss You. John Davis, we speak your name and we don't forget you. You were the voice, my friend, behind those two long-haired, light-skinned brothers that couldn't sing a lick. John
the
Davis
one was light-skinned.
I'm pretty light-skinned. I can't sing a lick either.
So God rest John Davis. On behalf of my bro Danny O, Notorious T.I.D., my name is Donnie Da Silva. This is episode 58 in the can. We are done this party. We will see you next time.
Dose.